AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're back on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Well, just last week, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare did something that, well, they've not done in over 38 years, as they've broken a number of years of precedent and have endorsed a presidential candidate, as they recently announced that they will be endorsing Joe Biden this year. So we're happy to be joined by Jim Roosevelt Jr., who is an attorney, Democratic Party official, and also the grandson of former President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, as he joins us now on the show. Should also mention that Jim is the vice chair of the advisory board for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. So, Jim, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Brett, it's great to be with you, and a very important time to be talking about Social Security.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk about your group endorsing Joe Biden, because for the most part, you guys try to stay out of politics and stay as a nonpartisan group. But this year, you guys decided to go in a different direction, being that this is a very important election. So talk about why your group decided to endorse Joe Biden this year.
Well, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare was founded by my father, Congressman James Roosevelt, 38 years ago, to protect the legacy that my grandfather started with the foundation of Social Security in 1935. And over those 38 years since my father started the organization, they've focused on the House and the Senate. But they finally decided this year they had to make an endorsement in the presidential race because they really believe that Joe Biden gets it about Social Security and Medicare, which he has referred to as sacred obligations. And he understands that they are essential to seniors' well-being, even more so during this COVID crisis. And on the other hand, the current occupant of the White House, Donald Trump, has taken steps to undermine both Social Security and Medicare, but especially Social Security. And we can go into how he's doing that in some more detail if you'd like.
Yeah, let's do that, because what you're referring to is the payroll tax cut, or what I really like to call it. It's just a cut to Social Security. Can you explain in more detail how this exactly works? I've talked about it a few times on my show, but being that you are an expert on this topic, I want your overview, because overall, this is a really bad deal, not just for employees, but also employers as well. So talk about how this payroll tax cut that was implemented by the Trump administration works.
So thanks for the introduction you gave me. And the one credential that you didn't mention is that in the Clinton administration, I was associate commissioner of Social Security.
Gotcha.
For retirement policy. So I have studied this. And the way Social Security was set up to be financed was very intentional, that there would be a payroll tax, half paid by the employer and half by the employee, so that there would be an earned benefit for people when they retired, or when they lose a parent, or when they're disabled, and it wouldn't be subject to competing with everything else in the federal budget for general tax revenues. What President Trump has done is announced that he is giving employers the option to suspend collecting the payroll tax from employees, and that it wouldn't be payable until the 1st of January. Now, many employers are refusing to do that because they're saying, how are my employees going to come up with that money in a lump sum on the 1st of January? And what if they don't work here anymore? What do I do then? And so on. Federal employees are stuck. The president has directed all the federal agencies to stop collecting Social Security tax. And so that doesn't give their employees any choice as to whether they'll have to pay the lump sum. But there's two problems. First of all, if that money stops flowing into Social Security, then the chief actuary and everything at Social Security, contrary to what sometimes Republicans will want you to believe, everything is examined by the chief actuary to be actuarially sound. If that money stops flowing in to Social Security, Social Security will run out of the money to pay benefits not in 2033 or 2034 or something like that, but rather in 2023, just 3 years from now. And President Trump has said in one of his MAGA rallies that if he's reelected, he intends to never collect that money from employees. That cuts the heart out of what people are assured of with Social Security, which is a an absolute retirement benefit and a disability and survivor benefit. So it's a huge, huge problem. But it demonstrates just what Donald Trump and the Republicans in the House and Senate want to do to Social Security.
So essentially, there's only two outcomes that are going to, well, come from what's been implemented by the administration. As you said, on January 1st, all of a sudden, this money that's been deferred, we have to pay back. That money still needs to be collected, or as you said, so that's option one, where your employers and your employees are going to owe a whole bunch of money on January 1st, or option two is, well, we're never going to collect the money, which in essence is a cut to Social Security, which is what the Trump campaign promised in 2016 that they would never touch, so they've certainly backtracked on that. Not the first time they've certainly flip-flopped on an issue, so overall, those are two very bad outcomes that are going to happen with what's being implemented by the administration.
That's absolutely right. And the contrast with Joe Biden is just 180 degrees, because Joe Biden understands that we actually need to bring more revenue into Social Security so that we can make it a more generous benefit, and particularly for people getting the minimum benefit and for what's sometimes referred to as the old, which is because people are living longer and become more and more dependent on only having Social Security to live on. And that makes and that's particularly true of women who have lost a spouse.
So as you brought up, if someone is an employee of a federal agency, they don't have a choice. Their agency must abide by this payroll tax cut. But private employers don't necessarily have to. And you alluded to this just a couple of minutes ago, but it sounds like most private employers have decided not to participate in this program where they can defer the payroll tax cut, correct?
That is what I am hearing from large and small employers, that they say, we're not going to put our employees in that position, and for that matter, our own liabilities in that position. I tell you, my father and my grandfather would be outraged that President Trump and his Republican allies, Mitch McConnell and the other Republicans in the House and Senate, are trying to do to undercut the program. And that's why I'm 100% behind the National Committee's decision to endorse Joe Biden.
There's another aspect, too, that I think has been missed in this debate about this payroll tax cut. And that's the fact that, yeah, you know, if you cut this payroll tax cut or defer it temporarily, employees might get a few extra $100 in their pocket, but they're going to end up paying that down the road when there's a cut to Social Security, as what's being proposed by the Trump administration, or at least during his MAGA rallies, as you brought up. But there's also this payroll tax cut doesn't help anyone who's not an employee. And I'm thinking about people who are in the gig economy that work as independent contractors. They're not going to be helped by this whatsoever, even if employers in another alternate reality did decide to participate in this program. Gig economy workers really see no benefit from this whatsoever.
That's a very good point, Brad. And it also can't look at it as an effective pandemic stimulus, because people who have been furloughed or laid off don't get any benefit from it either.
We are speaking with Jim Roosevelt. He is the vice chair of the advisory board with the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, which recently announced that they have decided to endorse Joe Biden for president this year, which is the first time in 38 years of the existence of the NCPSSM that they have decided to endorse a presidential candidate. Jim is an expert on Social Security and Medicare. He's an attorney and also the grandson of former President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, knows a lot about this topic. So let's look ahead and say Donald Trump would unfortunately be reelected in the fall of 2020. What sorts of other moves might he and a Republican Congress do to try to dismantle Social Security and Medicare during a potential second term, as I'm sure there probably are, unfortunately, other weapons in their arsenal that they might look to go to in 2021 and beyond, should they win?
Well, the big risk that we're facing is that on November 10th, the Supreme Court will hear the case of where the Trump administration and the Republicans in the Senate have sued to have the Affordable Care Act thrown out. If there's two bad possibilities there. One is if President Trump has succeeded in appointing a new justice while he's still in office, even if he's not reelected, there would probably be a majority to do away with Obamacare and do away with the Medicaid expansion, do away with the subsidized health insurance through the Obamacare exchanges. But there's even a risk also is if the court stays with a vacancy and it ties 4-4, that puts the lower court decision into effect, and that lower court down in Texas ruled to throw out Obamacare. So we desperately need to have Joe Biden as president appointing a very different Supreme Court justice with a replacement for the late great RBG. Then you could have, well, a 4-4 where John Roberts might, as he did before, be the swing vote to keep Obamacare. If it's 6-3 against, you're not going to have John Roberts playing that kind of a role. So that's just one more reason that it's very important that we stop Trump from appointing a new justice now and then petition the Supreme Court to postpone the hearing on Obamacare until after January 20th.
And you hit the nail on the head right there about why this appointment of Donald Trump or Joe Biden potentially is so important, because back a few years ago when the Supreme Court ruled that the ACA was constitutional, it was John Roberts who switched sides and ruled with the liberal justices. But as you pointed out, even if the vacancy remains and we have a 4-4 decision where John Roberts joins the liberal justices again, well, that lower court ruling still stays in effect, which could overturn the Affordable Care Act, which would have devastating consequences for millions and millions of Americans. I do want to talk about this lawsuit a little bit more, though, because you, of course, are an attorney and an expert on the ACA. It looks like this was mainly challenged on what kind of a technicality in the language of the law. And really, this is something that shouldn't even be in the Supreme Court in the first place. It's just that you had this kind of rogue Texas court say, oh, well, this thing should be overturned, and therefore that had to go to the Supreme Court. Talk about what exactly this lawsuit is about.
So Mitch McConnell and the Republicans, along with Donald Trump, have been pledging to their base of support all along that they will do away with Obamacare. They also say they'll replace it with something great, but they haven't come up, even to this day, they haven't ever even proposed a replacement. I don't know if you noticed, but President Trump at another point in a MAGA rally last week said, oh, he's got the new plan all ready to go. He just hasn't announced it yet. So that's been 4 years in tweaking the language, apparently, in his great new plan. But we all know that there isn't really one there. The decision in the lower court is based on the hook that John Roberts, Chief Justice, used to uphold Obamacare. John Roberts is no progressive. He's a through and through conservative, mm-hmm. but he's very much concerned about his legacy and the legacy and the stature of the Supreme Court itself. So that when he was the swing vote, he went along, he found a hook to continue the strong reputation of the court by upholding Obamacare as constitutional. His hook was that the mandate in it created a tax on people who did not have health insurance. And he said, well, the Constitution lets the federal government enact the law to do lots of things as long as it's using its taxing power. That actually is something that goes back to the New Deal itself, where our conservative Supreme Court then was throwing out lots of things that my grandfather tried to do to keep people in food and clothing during the Depression, until finally one of the justices tipped off Secretary Frances Perkins, the first woman in the cabinet, the only person to serve in all four FDR presidential cabinets. And he said to her at a cocktail party in Georgetown, she said, Mr. Justice, how are we ever going to keep people fed and clothed if your court keeps throwing out what we're trying to do? And he said, the taxing power, my dear. That's the hook that John Roberts did to justify his vote among conservatives. This lower court down in Texas said, well, there's no mandate anymore, so there's no tax, so there's no hook, and threw it out. Now, that was just the excuse Roberts used to be the swing vote to keep Obamacare in place. So that's why we're in this fix right now. It's a fix that Roberts actually created because he tried to find a way to justify himself to other conservatives.
It's interesting, too, as you drew some parallels to what happened back in the 1930s with your grandfather when he was trying to implement so many programs from the New Deal that were getting struck down by a conservative Supreme Court. And it's interesting that if we have Joe Biden elected president this fall, but Republicans are still able to get their Supreme Court justice through and have a 6-3 majority, this could potentially look a lot like the 1930s, where, again, we could have many progressive policies put in place by President Joe Biden with a Democratic Congress that gets struck down by conservative Supreme Court. It's just interesting kind of how history repeats itself. And unfortunately, it might again if we have another conservative Supreme Court justice giving them that 6-3 majority.
Well, it looks a lot like the 1930s in many ways because there's so many people out of work. As well, and Joe Biden would have a real battle. Since we've been contemplating what may have to happen with the loss of Justice Ginsburg, there's begun to be discussion of what was called court packing in the 1930s. It's not really that. It's revising the size of the court, which has happened periodically throughout its existence. The current 9 justices weren't set until the first part of the 20th century, and the court was bigger and smaller at various times from the beginning of the country until then. The number of justices is set by a law passed by Congress, signed by the president, not by a constitutional amendment. And, of course, the country is much larger now than it was in the early 20th century in terms of both population and geography. There could be a lot of sense. There also could be some sense to setting a retirement age, which the Supreme Court and others has not had. Other federal courts have a retirement age when people become senior justices, and many state courts have a retirement age. Those are all things that could be done in order to introduce new blood and current thinking and demographics to the court.
And as you said, this is something that can be done by Congress and signed into law by the president, and it has happened many times throughout history. So, yeah, it certainly wouldn't be without precedent if we were to go through and make changes to the structure of the Supreme Court coming up during a potential new President Joe Biden administration. We've been speaking with Jim Roosevelt, who is an attorney, also a Democratic Party official, grandson of former President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR. He is the vice chair of the advisory board for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and an advocacy, which is, of course, an advocacy organization started in 1982 by his father. We've had a number of opportunities to speak with folks from the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, as, again, they recently decided to endorse Joe Biden for president, which is the first time they have ever endorsed a presidential candidate. Jim, really appreciate the time today and chatting through what's happening with the presidential election in terms of where the candidates stand and why your group decided to endorse Biden this year. Thanks again for the time.
Great to talk with you and with your listeners there on KTNF.
And their website is ncpssm.org. That's ncpssm.org.